Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
You have an hour.
Hour.
Okay.
Joe Ostrowski, nights on 670 The Score.
And the Colts gonna leave Soldier Field with a nice road victory, playing very stingy defense and just enough offense to be dangerous in a 19-11 win over the Bears.
We got to lick our wounds. We got to get back on track. That's a good defense that we played. We knew that it was going to be this style of game just because of who they are on defense and what they do on offense. But I just, you know, it would have been a lot better to get going there on O. And then, of course, on special teams, too many penalties and a block punt to start the game. Just not what we need to do to win a football game. You got to play better than that.
When were you on track, Matt, this year? I know what the record says. I'm just wondering when you were on track. When was your offense on track? Good evening. Yes, Early Joe is here. Sports Radio 670, The Score, The Joe O Show. Extended normally for Monday Night Football. We make way after a quick half hour, but have a little bit more time. I hate the reason we have more time, but the reality is because of COVID-19, because they pushed the game back between the Patriots and the Chiefs, and they're playing that one first. So they said, you know what, let's let people enjoy the finish of that game. Maybe it comes down to the final possession of the game, and then we can flip over about halfway through, and then we can check out the regular scheduled Monday night game between the Falcons and the Packers, which I think will be pretty interesting. There's a decent chance that one team gets their first win of the season, and then maybe the Bears and Packers will still be tied atop the NFC North with 3-1 records. I think that's a possibility. Everybody selling the Falcons right now, and for good reason, after what we've seen to the start of the year. But there's a chance that they could be on upset alert, like they like to say on game day. Good evening, Sports Radio 670, The Score, executive producer tonight, Rick Camp. So, Rick, do you think I'm going to be able to go an hour without talking about how Chris Ballard should be the general manager of the Bears and not Ryan Pace? And I think things would look a lot differently if Chris Ballard were here right now, and the upcoming years would look much differently and more optimistic.
I mean, if anybody heard him yesterday with the pregame show, then you should not be able to go this hour, because, I mean, they didn't get into too much of roster building with their current teams necessarily, but just someone that sounds like someone you can speak to, that accepting ideas, just like a well-balanced guy. And maybe Ryan Pace is that. He just doesn't exude that when he's necessarily at the microphone. But yeah, Chris Ballard definitely seems like the goods much more than Ryan Pace has been.
Man, I just wish, Rick, I wish he was in the building for like a decade and the Bears had more Chris Ballard information. I wish that would have happened.
How bad did those skeletons in the closet have to be that he wanted to clear out? Or how attached did those skeletons have to be to ownership that he couldn't be the guy and that Ryan Pace was the dude?
Some people can't handle the truth. We are all well aware of that. And we're going to find out a lot. I mean, we know about Ryan Pace at this point, but we're going to find out a lot about Matt Nagy this season. Good evening. If you want to check in, phone lines are open. Text lines always open 24/7 right here on Sports Radio 670. The Score, 312-644-6767, 312-644-6767. You can reach out to me on Twitter as well, at Joe0670. at Joe 0670. So the way football coaches talk about the 16-game NFL season, you got sick of Lovie Smith saying his time here with the Bears, is they divide the season into quarters. And if I told you a month ago, okay, I'm not going to tell you how it's going to look, but at the end of the first quarter, it's arguably the softest portion of the Bears' schedule. Maybe the fourth quarter is really the softest, but we don't know how those teams are going to look. Houston just fired their head coach and GM today. So how are they going to look near the end of the year? And then you've got Minnesota trending up, I guess. They're moving the football, unlike this Bears offense. Jacksonville and last game of the year, Green Bay, Aaron Rodgers might not even play. You don't even know what's going to happen. Will they have their playoff seating all set up there at that point? Maybe. So maybe the fourth quarter of the season will actually be easier. But the tough part is in the middle of the year, and it started yesterday with the Indianapolis Colts. But the point is, if I told you before the year, first quarter, Bears are going 3-1. Soft part of the schedule, but they're able to take advantage. I think most people would accept that. But in a game with slim margins, the slimmest of margins, they could absolutely be 1-3. They could. They're so close to being 1-3. I give them credit for that, for those wins, for those comeback victories. They had some perfect spots. But it's hard to feel great about the 3-1 Bears after what we've seen. The comebacks came against two of the worst defenses in all of football. And it doesn't matter which guy is under center. We knew coming in, we'd argue about this. As soon as one guy struggles, they're screaming for the other guy. It doesn't matter right now. And we don't have enough of a sample size on Nick Foles. We know what Mitchell Trubisky is. And maybe they're about the same guy. I know Lawrence talked about this earlier today. Their careers would tell you, yeah, they're pretty close to the same guy. They run the offense quite differently. But when you look at all the numbers, like, yeah, all the ratings and everything, yards per pass, they're all pretty close. But the scoring droughts continue. So what's different? We knew they were stepping up in class with a much tougher defense, and that's not saying much than the G-men, the Falcons, and the Lions. Sure, it's better. I don't know that this is great, and oh, the headline is number one defense in the NFL. They really took care of the Bears' offense. I don't even know that they're good, the Colts' defense. Look at the teams they face. Look at the quarterbacks they face. Not sure that they're good. Much better. They've done a great job building up that defense, making some important transactions. But I'm not sure they're top five or even top 10 in the league right now. You go 58 minutes and 25 seconds and you have 3 points. First 9 drives, score 3 points. 7 punts. First 9 drives, 11 first downs. And understandably, the reaction is, well, Mitch can do this. Atlanta, 10 points in 3 quarters. Missing guys everywhere for that game. Giants, no points in the second half when you had an opportunity to put that team away. None. Detroit, 6 points through 3 quarters. It's a big ask when you're asking your defense to be elite week after week, year after year. It doesn't happen in this league. And some people are surprised. Well, the Bears gave up 19 points. It could have been a lot worse. They had some pretty decent red zone stops yesterday. Could have been a lot worse. And with the offense they have, it has to be an opportunistic defense. Khalil Mack can't drop that interception just outside the red zone yesterday. It can't happen. But they did turn some red zone possessions for the Colts into field goals. So you give them credit. They gave up less than 20 points. You're supposed to win those games. And the Bears didn't have a chance. We always want one person or one thing to blame. And if you've listened to me over the last few years, a lot has been about the general manager and the quarterback. And it's more than that, and I think we all know it's more than that. So is Matt Nagy going to be wrong a couple of times here? We know what we have in Trubisky, but he targeted Nick Foles. That's what's scary. Now is the coach wrong too? Could be. But I don't think anybody is, even the biggest Trubisky haters, I don't think anybody thought, okay, quarterback change, everything is fixed. Nagy thought changing coaches would help everything, and maybe it will at the end of the season, but right now, not so much. Brings in a new offensive coordinator, gets lasers plays, brings in a quarterback's coach, offensive line coach, because the general manager didn't fix the problems on the offensive line because the GM decided to give away so many picks, they don't have enough to address all of the issues on the team. I will say that early on, the additions at corner and wide receiver with Mooney look to be good so far, just through a few weeks. Tight end, some are surprised that they're not getting anything out of Cole Kmet. I'm not one of them. I'm not saying he's a bad player. He won't make it in the league, but it takes time with that position. Look at even some of the great ones. They don't walk in year one and contribute right away, especially when you have it's not even a mediocre offense. It's bad. It's not below average. That's giving them way too much credit. No matter what metric you want to take a look at, whether it's yards per play, whatever, once again, Bears at the very bottom. So when you look across the NFL, one of the reasons, besides melting late in games, but people kill the Lions and the Falcons is what? In Detroit, Matt Patricia's a defensive guy, and they don't have a good defense. And we know what happens at the end of games. Case in point, once again, yesterday, they go up 14-0 early on the Saints. They end up losing that ballgame. Dan Quinn got to the Super Bowl once, had a big lead and blew it. But I look at Quinn and say, okay, defensive guy, you expect them to have a strong defense. Nope. It's the same situation here, guys. And there's a lot of different reasons for it. But Matt Nagy was brought here to fix the offense, to bring this offense up to speed with the rest of the league. And he still has one of the worst offenses in the National Football League. There's just no debating that. And we're going on years now. It isn't just a small sample size of four games against three pretty bad defenses. It's years. And he got his guy. So the shield is gone now. 312-644-6767 if you want to chime in. 312-644-6767. Let's hear a little bit from Sage Rosenfels with Dan Burstein earlier today, just talking about the issues with the Bears' offensive scheming.
Nick didn't play great, but it wasn't like they were guys wide open. It wasn't like, you know, scheme-wise, the offensive coaching staff schemed to where players were open. It seemed like almost every single throw was contested, even the big plays down the field. Mooney had that catch down the left sideline. Great play, but, you know, it was a one-on-one, guys right there. Robinson obviously had the touchdown at the end. There is nobody wide open. It is all contested. And some of that is, of course, the Colts. But to me, a lot of that is scheme. A lot of that is the offense. You know, offensive coordinator, the head coach who's an offensive guy, they have to find ways to get guys more open, and they just don't seem to do that.
Pretty fascinating, because that's one thing that we've said that Nagy can do. He can scheme you open. He can do that. And we love to point to the Bucs game a couple of years ago. We love to do that. And now you hear a guy that's played the position, an NFL analyst right now, he's saying, well, that's a big problem on the team. And he brought up Mooney there. That was nice to see a fifth-round pick step in, and it looks like he can be a deep threat, even though they brought in Ted Ginn for that. But it's great to see if he can be that guy for you. But what you also notice is Anthony Miller, another guy the GM moved up for. How does the team feel about him right now? Did you notice he wasn't on the field a ton? And then what he was? Drop. Missed a ball. Little overthrown, but he missed a ball, and then it became an interception by Blackman. Here's more of Rosenfels talking about how the scheme doesn't give clues to the quarterback or offensive line.
I think the job's on the offensive coordinator to give his team some idea of if it is man or zone. You have to give these guys some tips. And, you know, I think that's part of the coordinator's job. And again, obviously Bill Lazor is the coordinator, but we also know the head coach is involved. You have to give guys a little bit of a heads up to make their life easier. If you just line up in a formation, you can't always tell if it's man or zone, whether they're in a two high safeties and at the end, at, you know, at it looks like zone, but the snap, they might blitz somebody and boom, it turns into man-to-man. But if you give them some tips pre-snap, then they can go out there and have a better they can anticipate what the defense is doing. And maybe the center can get out there a little bit quicker, or the guard can get out there a little bit quicker, or the running back can try to, you know, do something different. You have two plays on. Hey, if it's a screen and we don't like it versus man, let's run a man play. So you have two plays in the huddle, and they come out and they show man-to-man defensively. Hey, let's run that second play. Let's run Allen Robinson on a shallow crossing route with a pick or something and have a really good run play on. They did not do that in that football game. And they don't do it very often in general to sort of give your guys a heads up. And those are missed opportunities, because it really, as a coordinator, I think it's your job to make his life as easy as possible on your players.
Sage Rosenfels on the Dan Bernstein Show earlier today, Sports Radio 670, The Score. And one of the reasons that the fan base and many media members are putting the heat on the Bears to sign Allen Robinson isn't just because they're fans of Allen Robinson. Like, the offense is bad right now. Imagine the offense without A-Rob. These are the offenses worse than the Bears in yards per play so far this season. Cincinnati Bengals rookie quarterback, by the way, who has thrown for 300 yards in every game so far. Denver, they don't have a quarterback. And Vic Fangio, defensive mind Vic Fangio, is their head coach. Giants, they don't know if Daniel Jones can play. Washington, they're trying to figure out the same thing with Haskins. Philadelphia showed up for the first time last night against San Francisco to pull off the upset, and the Jets, the worst team in the NFL, bar none. Adam Gase, he's going to be fired soon. Bill O'Brien was the first to go. I would have bet on Adam Gase, but I'm sure Gase not far behind. Same thing with Patricia. In fact, I'm surprised it hasn't happened with Patricia yet, because I believe Detroit is now on their bye week. That's where the Bears are offensively. That's where they're at. And man, Eggie loves to scold everybody about, I'm not an idiot, I know we have to run the football. Okay. Are you going to get any play action working if you don't, if you have zero success running the ball? Was it 1.8 yards per carry yesterday? 1.8.
Is that good?
Yeah, I think you know. I think you know. You have to be balanced. I swear, it doesn't feel like we do that press conference once a month since Nagy's been here, Rick, that talking about the balance and we have to stick to the run. He may say it, but I don't think he truly believes it at all.
No, I don't think so. I think he, I wonder if he's someone where it's almost like the coordinator version of being a front runner, where his stuff works when he has the personnel, and at that point it can be dynamic, but being able to scale it down for lesser players, or, you know, not as high IQ players, I wonder if that's the issue. If there's no scaled down version, functional version of his offense.
Okay, so that's interesting. Because when you just mentioned about everything being perfect, right? That's when his offense works. That's when they were scoring a lot when he was in Kansas City before, when he was the play caller for the second half of the year, basically. And they end up losing in the playoffs when I don't know what happened, what he was doing in the second half. I believe that was against the Titans. But you mentioned you need all the weapons, you need everything to work. And that's a fair argument. So in Kansas City, that's what happened. right? Like, he had the elite tight end. He had the great quarterback play. So, sure. But with Nick Foles and, you know, basically pretty close to the same offense with his guy, Doug Peterson, in Philadelphia, and that's what we keep pointing to. Well, Nick Foles won a Super Bowl. He can get hot, and he can carry your team because we saw it that one year. Just think about that offense. Wasn't everything around Foles during that run when the Eagles had a 13-3 regular season, and then they go and outscore the Patriots to win the Super Bowl? Wasn't everything around Nick Foles perfect? The offensive line, the different looks that you had at running back with LeGarrette Blount and Corey Clement coming out of the backfield in the passing game. Zach Ertz, the elite tight end. You had some deep threats like Nelson Aguilar, possession guy like Alshon Jeffrey. Trey Burton was tight end number three on that roster. Arguably, when Foles was at his best, wasn't everything perfect around him? Not so much here with the Bears.
Or Jacksonville. Or with the Rams when he was there. Funny how that works.
Nick Foles, 0-5 in his last five starts as a quarterback. 0-5. It's funny, when you say Jacksonville before the season, people just wanted to give him a pass because, oh, it's Jacksonville. Of course he was bad. Everything was bad. You could look at it that way, or you could say a six-round draft pick came in and he took his job for a portion of the season. Oh, you're healthy? Why don't you sit down a little bit longer? We've got Gardner Minshew. Oh, you want to pay the guaranteed money left to Nick Foles? What else are you willing to give us? That's what happened in the offseason.
Hey, Joe, you know how we mentioned Kansas City has all the stuff pretty well perfect in terms of personnel?
Yeah.
Remember who was in Kansas City, not as the main guy, but one of the guys from 2013 to 2016?
Are you talking about Foles or what are you?
The executive, Chris Ballard.
Oh, Ballard. Yeah, because I believe he was here a year when Emery came in. Then he went over. Very talented. Wherever Chris Ballard goes, it's a very talented roster when he has a little bit of pull. Yeah, you're absolutely right. Am I being too down on the Bears after a 3-1 start? Because we just know how close it is to 1-3.
I think it's fair. Because of the way they've played and the quality of opponent, and just realizing, at least from what we know of each team so far, which, you know, really, I guess who the hell knows week to week after what we saw at minimum in the early slate yesterday. But it's just hard to look at the rest of the schedule and be like, you know what, this is going to get easier. Or even if the Bears start to get their stuff together a little bit, as they're figuring this out, if you want to give them a little bit of benefit of the doubt because of the lack of offseason, whatever, so is everybody else. So you you can't paint that for just the Bears, but not, you know, the rest of the teams that are going to be on their schedule.
I want to go back to my original point here, and this is why it bothers me so much. Even though they're sitting at 3-1, and maybe the Packers lose tonight and they're tied for first place in the NFC North. That's possible. Even though the Packers are 6.5-point favorites, no Davante Adams, no Lazard out there. I could see the Falcons, a desperate team, 0-3, pulling out an upset victory at Lambeau. It's possible. But the part that really is worrisome is, yes, you had three soft defenses at the beginning of the year, and they're 3-0. Cool. That's great. Step up in class yesterday with the Indianapolis Colts. No, I don't think they're the best defense in the NFL. I don't think they're top five. Xavier Rhodes really all of a sudden going back to his prime? No, the guy couldn't play at the end of last year, and we all knew it. So is he going to play to this level for the rest of the season? They continue to get pressure on the opposing quarterbacks. Maybe he can, but I'm not expecting it. But great point, Rick. Like, these other teams are going to continue to improve. Tampa's got a better defense than most of the teams the Bears have played. Carolina, coming into the season, we thought they would be at the bottom, and maybe they are, but I did see them yesterday pull off their second consecutive win, and I did see them keep Kyler Murray to 133 yards, and Hopkins had 40-something. Larry Fitzgerald, I think he only had 4 yards in the game. That's a well-coached team with Matt Rhule and Joe Brady. They're going to scheme some stuff up. Rams, Saints, Titans? That's the issue with me. So if you're going to go on scoring droughts against these teams that we're talking about, it's going to be rough. And maybe at the end of the season, you're going to be a 500 team. So it's fair to say, okay, we're 3-1 at the end of the first quarter. It's not all that bad, but let's look at the big picture too. Because yesterday, a lot of concerns on many, many different levels. Joe Osho, Sports Radio 670, The Score. You want to call, you want to text, 312-644-6767, 312-644-6767. Also want to get to this next, because Theo Epstein gave his State of the Cubs. He said a few very important things that I want to hit on, and just makes you wonder, how much longer is he going to be here? It sounds like he's going to be here for the 2021 season, but will he be there past that year? We've got Monday Night Football coming your way at 7 o'clock. Joe Ostrowski, Rick Camp, executive producer, 670 The Score on the radio.com app. Joe Osho, Sports Radio 670, The Score. Monday Night Football coverage coming your way between the Falcons and the Packers at 7 o'clock. We got a pair of Monday night games. I love that. I wish it was every week. I don't like why we got it, but I do love it when we have a pair of Monday night games. And like this, where they actually overlap, so much better. Right, Rick? You're the big NBA guy. Early on when you had a lot more teams, not when we're down to the final two, you had to love that when they were overlapping all the games.
Oh, absolutely. One game gets out of hand, you flip over to another one, or you're insane like me and you also have League Pass, so then you can have two games running at once. Yeah, it's...
You didn't need it?
You didn't need it, did you? At times, yeah.
Oh, okay.
There were like two or three games going on at a time because they had the three courts they could utilize.
Oh, okay. Oh, you've got to be sad, man. It's almost over.
I know, it's a little weird. I'm, you know, last night's game was fun to watch just because it was so surprising. But yeah, it's not feeling great getting down to the end and knowing that it's looking like next season's not going to start until, my guess is like early February at the earliest.
Really? I mean, they threw out December 1st, and I assume there's no way that happened?
No, Adam Silver's already dismissed that and pretty much said there's no chance before 2021. But a lot of the rumors are saying the best case scenario of, like, you know, being able to get a significant amount of fans in there to where it makes it advantageous for them to start earlier than expected would be, like, mid-January, but more likely February, and they're willing to hold out until March. If they can get to the right amount of people that they want in the buildings.
Oh, man. Naturally, I'm just thinking about my life.
Well, right.
Because we don't have any Bulls play-by-play, I've got two full shows every single day.
Right, because like the thing is, everybody was so focused on this season, but nobody was thinking about the repercussions reverberating out for the next season. Yeah. That's the big problem.
And there's going to be a push from owners to push it back a little bit if there's any chance of getting fans in. And it's outdoors, but we're starting to see it in certain NFL states. So I'm sure the NBA owners are like, come on, let's just keep pushing it back a little bit. Either
an antidote, which seems, at least I would guess, unlikely, or just something that works in their favor. Because, yeah, it's not like these outdoor stadiums, like they've got more to deal with there. And yeah,
are they going to stick with the from what you've seen? I'll get to Theo Epstein in a quick second, but are they going to stick with what you've seen to the draft dates and the free agency dates though?
Yeah.
That's coming right up.
Yeah. The draft is set in stone. It's not as early as it was, because initially the draft was like 3 days after game 7 of the finals would be, which is kind of insane, but now it's at least a few weeks after that. And I forget the exact date for free agency, but I want to say it's like a week after the draft, something along those lines. So those are pretty much set, because I can only assume once you get into 2021, regardless of when the season starts, they're going to start to probably let teams try and work out at least with each other in some sort of semi-bubble-ish format that's a little easier to do, you know, with an individual team versus anything else.
Gotcha. That's my EP, Rick Camp. I'm Joe Ostrowski, Sports Radio 670, The Score. So I asked Rick to pull the most important 5 minutes from Theo Epstein. He did the State of the Cubs with the Cubs media today. Here's Theo talking about, during the State of the Cubs, about the state of the roster of his team.
It's important to recognize the unique nature of this year and what players had to go through without using it as a crutch or an excuse. It's appropriate to recognize the limitations of a 60-game sample relative to a 162-game sample and what that means. But it's also important to recognize that these games counted. They were really important. They were, each game was almost three times as important as a normal game, and that we were competing, giving everything that we had to win. And so just as and we can break down the season more if you wish, but just as there was a lot to be proud of with what our players accomplished this year and what we accomplished as an organization, we also have to own the shortcomings and not write them off as some, you know, product of unique circumstances or short season. And the reality is that our biggest issue this year, the thing that we were not proud of, was our offensive production. And following the pattern of the last 3 years, especially when it counted the most down the stretch and into October. So that's something that we have to own. But any proper assessment of things that transpired this year include an adjustment for context and circumstances, you know, to gain deeper understanding into it.
A year ago, you said that there was nobody untouchable on the roster and that you were going to look at all avenues for improving. Obviously, you more or less stood pat. Does that still apply this year? And if you did want to make changes that are more than just minor changes, do you have any indication that the means exists in this landscape to do that?
It is certainly still the case that there are no untouchables. You know, that's been our policy for 9 years, and I think the policy of most teams. And, you know, clearly, some change is warranted and necessary. We have not performed up to our expectations offensively, and especially at the most important times of year, and sort of simply hoping for a better outcome moving forward doesn't seem like a thoughtful approach. So embracing some change, even significant change, is warranted. As far as like, is that possible? Is it possible to thread the needle and improve in 2021 while also setting ourselves up for the long-term future? I think it is. You know, on one hand, we have to be honest about our performance, and we have not gotten to the point with our offensive production that we expected to get to. You know, with a number of players who are really talented and have done some remarkable things in this game, you know, MVP awards, MVP consideration, all-star, you know, consistent offensive performance by certain guys at a really high level. And to have the year we had this year, like we have to own that. Just, we expected our offense and our core position group to be our strength, as guys are 27, 28 years old, you know, some guys 30, 31. We expected it to be a strength, and it hasn't. So we have to be honest about that. And it's a challenging environment out there. That said, like, we have a lot going for us as an organization moving forward, and a lot of chips to bring to the table with us this offseason, both in terms of building, a very strong and improved team in 2021, and also, you know, in some instances being transactional as we see how the marketplace unfolds. So we have two of the best starting pitchers in the game on good contracts moving forward. Our most important relief pitcher righted himself after the first three or four outings of the year and pitched at a level of dominance over the last two-thirds of the season that is in line with his career norms. Our three most valuable position players this year by WAR in Ian Happ, Jason Hayward, and Wilson Contreras are all under club control for multiple years going forward. We have four really accomplished big bats who are coming off career worst years, who are all entering contract years. You know, a really sound defense, I think an excellent manager coming off a great first year and coaching staff. Like there's a lot to work with going forward. That said, like, especially offensively, we have to be really open to going back to the drawing board and embracing some change. A lot, you know, there are players on our roster who are part of the solution offensively, who are going to be part of the next really productive Cubs offense, including in October. And there are players from outside the organization who are too. So we have to figure that out.
You have four players heading into their free agent year. And if I remember last year, basically ownership doesn't want it to be where there's a, you know, all four of those guys are hitting free agency and leave, and there's this cliff that falls off. How can you correct that this offseason? How imperative is it that it happens this winter or before next trade deadline?
Yeah, I mean, that's clearly something we've been mindful of for a while. And there's always a trade-off in being transactional and taking some of those talented players away from the current group and solidifying the future. There are trade-offs and balances that you have to be mindful of. And the math simply changes, you know, as you get to a point where a lot of your best players only have 1 year left, it becomes less appealing to continue to invest sort of opportunity cost in simply the present. We have to find a way to win in 2021 and also solidify a future. It's not enough to just move forward completely as is and then deal with these issues at the end of the next year. There are issues that we've been mindful of. We've been making adjustments as we go, but the sort of impactful, significant moves that change the mix and set ourselves up better for post 2021 have not gotten across the finish line. I think, you know, the math changes a little bit. Like those moves, consideration of those moves is certainly called for as we enter this offseason.
Theo Epstein earlier today, meeting with the media, given the state of the Cubs. So after hearing from Theo, I think most of us believe that he's going to stick around. Now he's still going to have his yearly chat with Tom Ricketts. Maybe that changes. He signed for one more year. But does anybody believe that Theo Epstein's going to be here longer than that? I was reading a lot of the stories out there that maybe there's a chance that he sticks around. Do you really think that? His opening press conference, when he first arrived here 9 years ago, he brought up Bill Walsh's comment about, for management, you've got to move on after about 10 years. This upcoming season is year number 10, and he talked about transition during this press conference. I think we've all felt that it's been set up for Jed Hoyer to take over when Theo Epstein moves on to whatever he wants to do. It's ownership or outside of sports, whatever it is. But is the transition going to start right now? A lot of layers there. So there's that. And then now for the third straight year, the offense can't hit at the end of the year. If we go back 12 months, just talking about the core, we heard a lot of that stuff. So we thought there was going to be change there, and there wasn't. And they ran it back, and they expected change. We're going to change the coaches. We're going to add some cheap guys here and there. What really changed? In your 60-game sample, it was a successful regular season when you were playing the two Central divisions. But even the biggest Cubs fan, I don't think you guys were thinking that this team was primed for a deep run with all the holes on the roster that you have here. When they say core, what's the core? That's what I wonder. Rick, when I say Cubs core or refer to that, what you would think of in 2016 and 2017 is probably different than reality in 2020. Don't you agree?
Absolutely. I mean, Theo referenced it today when he mentioned the guys that he mentioned, not in specifically as the core, but as guys that are signed longer than just one more year, were Happ and Hayward.
Yeah.
And in terms of position players, that was it. So
Contreras he brought up too,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, Contreras as well.
But yeah. So
not so as overwhelming.
I I was kind of joking around about this, Rick, but I kind of said, wait, did Theo just fall in love with his own guys and turn into John Paxson over the last couple of years before our very own eyes?
I mean, at least Theo's guys, you know, performed in the playoffs at some point.
I'm kind of joking, but okay, I am joking. But it kind of felt like that happened.
Not as far off as Cubs fans would hope, though.
But yeah, over the last year, it kind of felt like that happened. Okay, let's run it back again. It's going to change. It's going to change. Nothing changes. I mean, look at that.
Or it's also the insistence on getting peak value,
well,
when not realizing that the bar on peak value might have changed.
I'm not going to argue with him about they have two of the best starting pitchers. Yu Darvish, he was in the Cy Young conversation, and some people would give him their vote, I'm sure, in the National League. And we know what Hendricks is, and they're very happy to have him locked up for a very long period of time. And while he's going to say we have Hayward, we have Happ, we have Contreras for multiple years, he's right. But did you want those guys to be your best players? Because the Cubs are a lot better when their best players are Chris Bryant, Javi Baez, and Kyle Schwarber and Rizzo, right? I mean, okay, you ran it back for a third straight time instead of making a move. And now what's their value? Changes to the core are expected. My question is, what's the core right now? Because the core four that we've talked about for years are not the team's best players. KB, Baez, Schwarber, Rizzo. And maybe some of you are driving, you're thinking, well, Joe, that's probably a good thing. Maybe they can afford a couple of those guys to return. Is it? Do you want them to bring all of them back? Or two or three of them back? What makes you think it's going to be different down the line? I was really bothered by the Baez excuses that were ready to roll during the national broadcast against the Marlins. It's because of no fans and Javi that drives him. Okay, are you sure? What kind of investment do you want to make? Are you positive? A lot of questions. Okay, they have to shake it up in some way. It could be fascinating to find out what they end up doing and where they think the real problems are. So no, not the coaches, not the manager. Yeah, you don't have a deep starting rotation. That's part of it. The bullpen has been a problem. But look to the heart of the team right now. And as it sounds like they're going to be in a transition period too. Should Theo be making all these decisions if he's not going to be there? I know they build a consensus. I get that. But as long as he's here, he's going to be the one making the final call. Should he be doing that if he's not going to be here? Can't wait to see what they do this offseason. It's going to be wild. 312-644-6767, 312-644-6767. Joe Ostrowski with you. If you want to jump in, talk a little Bears. Also talk some Cubs, of course. And then we've got Monday Night Football coming your way. Top of the hour, the Packers and the Falcons. Joe Osho, 670, The Score, in the Radio.com app. Joe Ostrowski with you. You've got Sports Radio 670, The Score, covering the news of the day, and that's reacting to the Bears' loss, the first one of the season. So, yeah, they're 3-0, but it has not looked, rather 3-1, hasn't looked pretty. It's not a pretty 3-1, any stretch of the imagination, because the offense has no imagination. And also discussing what Theo Epstein had to say at his press conference with the media earlier today. Reading between the lines, it certainly sounds like it will be his last year with the Cubs, and that would make perfect sense. Phone lines open, 312-644-6767. Scott in South Elgin, you're up on 670, The Score.
Hey, what's happening, Joe? I'd say happy Bears Monday, but there's nothing happy about it, so no. We'll talk about the Cubs.
Yeah, go for it, man. What's on your mind?
If you would have told me in 2016 that I'd be calling you in 2020 saying I want Chris Bryant, Javier Baez, Anthony Rizzo, Kyle Schwarber all off my baseball team, you would have told me I'm drunk, but unfortunately we've gotten to that point. It's almost like waiting for those guys to turn the corner in the playoffs is the equivalent of waiting for Mitch Trubisky to turn the corner as a quarterback. It's just not going to happen. It's simply never going to happen. And I'm sorry, I don't know what their value is. I don't know if they even have any value anymore. I think we held on to them a little bit too long, should have sold high, but we didn't. And you're right, I do believe Theo is gone after this year. They have a contingency plan in place, obviously, for that. It kind of seems like that's the direction it's heading. But you got to start moving these pieces, otherwise you're just going to be stuck in baseball hell. I'll hang up and listen, bud.
Thanks, Scott. Appreciate the phone call. I hear your frustration. I understand every second of it. Boy, things changed quickly in 1 year. Boy. I wish they would have followed their gut, because they said a lot of this 1 year ago. They knew it. They saw it again. And you think it's magically they're gonna start hitting at the end of the year in the most important games because they changed the manager? They know that's not how it goes. And we're the ones that make a bigger deal about the managerial change. They understand it. Now there's some guys that are locked up for a long period of time. Can't do anything about the Jason Hayward contract. He actually had a pretty good year. Yu Darvish deal a year ago looked awful. Now looks really good. But it's the guys you had that you called your core four. That's been the problem over the last couple of years. Oh, yeah, that Albert Amora pick did not work either. Mike in Evanston, you're on 670, The Score with Joe Ostrowski.
Hey, what's going on, fellas?
Hey, Mike, what's going on?
Hey. Yeah, not much. Yeah, I agree a lot with the last caller. You know, the rest of the league has caught up to the Cubs and passed them up in terms of player development, drafting players. I mean, the last 3 years of the offseason have been horrible, and so has the player development and drafting. You know, I don't mind seeing Bryant traded if they can. I'm tired of seeing him, you know, injured at every turn. Baez really tickled my craw this year. You know, Schwarber, gosh, get rid of him already. I mean, popping out with base loaded as he did. You know, here's the thing, too. The Cubs, if they suck next year and Darvish is pitching well, why not do what the White Sox did and use Darvish as they did Sale and get some young guys, rebuild? Hey, the Dodgers did it 3 years ago. The Dodgers actually ate what they DFA'd Matt Kemp, what, in 17, 16, they ate that money. I mean, the Dodgers actually ate a bunch of money, and they rebuilt in a sense. And they still won. Yankees, same thing when they traded for Torres. I mean, it could be done. The Cubs kid, there's some interesting pieces in the offseason if they get maybe like a Marcus Semien, move Bryant, throw Baez at third. There's Marcelo Zuna. I mean, there's some interesting things that they could plug and play. DJ LeMahieu, who they should have signed 3 years ago, they could plug and play some guys for a few years while they rebuild. And if they suck, maybe, you know, get some kind contracts for those guys and trade them as well, and let's rebuild.
How did they win this many games, Mike?
Pitching.
Yeah, especially early, right? Yeah.
Pitching, that's it. Other than that, they were awful. They were so bad.
Thanks, Mike. Appreciate the phone call. Yeah, the first couple weeks, I think it was first 2 to 3 times through the rotation, even the back end, guys like Alec Mills, it was unbelievable. And you knew that wasn't going to continue. But we might look back and say that was the worst thing that could possibly happen. All the games that they won, so they had to pass on another trade deadline. In fact, they made some small tweaks, which were expected because they would say, hey, this is what they deserve. They played well. They won a lot of baseball games. But they knew this team wasn't very good. They did. We'll have more time to get into this tomorrow. I'll be here from full show tomorrow, 6 to 10. Next couple nights, full shows here on Sports Radio 670, The Score. My name is Joe Ostrowski. If you're into sports betting, check out my show Bet Sweats on the freeradio.com app. Myself and NFL analyst Ross Tucker, it airs live Monday through Friday, 9 to 11 a.m. And you can subscribe to the podcast, get all the cool interviews that we do today with Adam Chernoff and also Will Brinson from CBS Sports. His hot take, Rick, Will's hot take is, when he said this when they were 3-0, is that it's great, the 3-0, good for them. Bears are a bad team, and they're going to finish 7-9. Is that possible?
Very.
7-9. They go 7. They go from 8-8 to 7-9 after a 3-0 start. Maybe Pace is gone. I don't think Matt Nagy will be gone. Maybe Pace will be gone. Keep it here for Monday Night Football. the pregame between the Falcons and the Packers. My name is Joe Ostrowski. I'll talk to you tomorrow at 6 and in the morning on BetSweatsRadio.com. Sports on 670 The Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.